Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Wolf.
Thank you very much, Ruby.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, firstly, how would you define the term clicktivism?
Clicktivism is really the online form of slacktivism, and that's where people get involved in very low involvement token gestures, something that's very easy sharing, liking. So to give yourself that gratification of actually doing something and to give the impression that you're doing something, that's that low involvement. So there's a very low barrier to entry, you might look at it.
Yeah, of course. Now, what would you say are some examples of social media and social media activism, known as clicktivism, in recent times?
Yeah, you've mentioned quite a few of those really dominant ones. We've talked a lot about Me Too. We've Bring Back Our Girls was a classic one because a lot of people jumped on that bandwagon. And I think that the big one that might still stick out for a lot of people, and I think that's where we saw a change, was the whole Kony campaign. And that goes back all the way to 2012, actually. I was quite surprised when I looked at how far it goes back. But that was quite classic in Australia, where people wanted to make Kony famous. A lot of our students certainly jumped on it at the time and got engaged. But by the time the day of action actually came around, everyone had forgotten about it, at least in Australia. So there are those low-level entry things where people do get enraged, they jump on a hashtag, and then nothing really follows in terms of action on the ground. And that's the tricky thing with any form of slacktivism, that you need that lead through, you need some offline actions, or at least something that enables you to follow through, to go beyond just sharing a post or just liking something.
Absolutely. And Kony 2012 was Kony was really really something, honestly. That whole campaign was very, very interesting because I mean, a few different things came out about it, like with I'm not entirely sure if this is true, but I remember something coming out at the time about Kony being dead, and then the guy who made the Kony 2012 campaign had his own drama where he went a little nuts, and it's that was really something that we probably wouldn't have experienced without social media activism, you know what I mean?
And that's the dangerous thing, that especially in the early days, we're getting a bit more of an idea, but quite often you just don't know how it's gonna go. And their problem at the time was they didn't expect it to spread as fast and as wide as it actually did. I mean, in Australia, it was interesting because there was so much hype around it, and I think they peaked way too early with the follow-through action. So I actually went out for a cycle in the morning. There was a night of action where everyone was supposed to paint their town red. And I saw one poster in the central CBD area. So they definitely peaked too early. I know in other countries, certainly in the UK, there was more action on the ground. So a lot of it has to do with timing. You have to be prepared if you try to create a viral campaign that it can go either way. And in that case, it was certainly completely overwhelmed with what's going on. I know those action packs were sent out way too late. But Kony really indicated that shift in thinking. So initially we thought, yes, it's all slacktivism, nobody cares, people just like stuff. And the other classic example in that case, and that a lot of people remember, is the ice bucket challenge. And initially that started off as a classic example as well, where people just shared the video. They thought it was hilarious to pour some ice cold water over other people and to dare them. But over time, when you look further into it, there was some real impact. People have become more aware of motor neurone disease. There has been a huge increase in awareness, but also in donations. So it again comes back to providing that follow-on action that people can actually take up.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, it's very interesting. So how, on the other hand, sorry, how would you define slacktivism itself? Because we've obviously mentioned it a few times.
Yeah, it's that that low-level tokenistic behavior where you give yourself for self-gratification purposes and kind of reassurance purposes and other people the impression that you engage, that you're doing something, but at the end of the day, it's not actually going to change anything. So that action in itself is not going to do anything in itself, apart from making yourself maybe feel good for a couple of seconds and giving others the impression you're doing something. And social movements have struggled with that for quite some time, that individuals would jump on something they like and then they move on to the next issue. We're moving very fast. Our attention span has shortened over time quite dramatically. And you see that on Twitter where certain hashtags are trending for a while and everyone gets enraged and then they move on to the next thing. However, what we also do have to keep in mind is that those kind of actions, and again, if there's some follow through, they do play an important role in terms of reinforcing social norms, and they can actually lead to some actual change if there is some, if there are some offline or other activities like donations, voting, participation in attendance at rallies and events. And I think we see that at the moment with this Extinction Rebellion as well, where people do get very much concerned about climate change. They do voice opinion online. But then there is an opportunity to actually get engaged locally in a small community group with a support mechanism to actually bring about, not necessarily change itself, but to engage in offline actions as well. Because what a lot of slacktivists really struggle with, they might be passionate about an issue and they might want to do more, but they don't actually know where to go from there.
Of course. And do you think maybe, like, I mean, looking at the kind of causes that we see like quote unquote slacktivism around, like, you know, like Me Too and Kony 2012 and stuff. And then looking at you know, causes like the climate crisis and the bushfire crisis that's happening right now, we can kind of see that there is a very different response to both of them. Like you are seeing people actually working towards helping for the bushfire crisis and donating money and whatnot. And do you think that maybe there's this different response purely because, like, it's maybe a bit closer to home, for example? I mean, looking at Australia specifically.
Yeah, I agree with you, although a lot of that noise around the bushfires is also happening overseas.
So absolutely.
A lot of that web traffic and push for donations in climate change action and so on, a lot of that is actually happening overseas as opposed to here. Mm. But yes, you're right. There have been calls for donations. People have been driving up to affected areas and deposited donations or helped out on the ground, cooked meals. So there were some real opportunities to actually not just be enraged online and to flesh your support, but to actually go and do something about it.
Yeah.
And I think these are the things where, and we've seen small charities overrun with donations or volunteers or where it kind of escalated or too many houses being made available. So that's really good. And what I've seen on Facebook, for example, a lot of your listeners would have also seen the Support Our Fireys kind of images. And in itself, that's a classic example of slacktivism. Your Facebook go red or up in flames just to demonstrate your support for fireys. Mm. That in itself is slacktivism. It doesn't actually do anything. But it does reinforce the urgency. It does demonstrate that you are concerned on which kind of side you're standing on an issue. And in this case, yes, there was the opportunity to donate. The tricky bit we're going to have, and that's another form of slacktivism in a certain extent, people jumping onto donation pages right now, and there are two dangers with that. A, we like to find quick fixes to make us feel better. So first of all, donations are brilliant. So people just give money and then we think we've done our bit.
Yeah.
But of course, that's just the first step. So the tricky thing is for community groups and governments to translate those donations and the initial interest into long-term actions. So we need a little bit more follow-through there. The other tricky bit within that area is, of course, you've got a lot of people trying to profiteer. So I've seen a lot of links going around to charities that are based overseas that are most likely not charities, but they're using that momentum and people's desire to at least quickly do something to make themselves be better and maybe tell other people they've donated to profiteer themselves. So I would always encourage people, take a step back and really have a look at who you're giving your money to, and maybe there are other ways in which you can demonstrate your support as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, last but certainly not least, this is a bit of a double one. Sum up, do you think that we live in an era of clicktivism or slacktivism? And just a bit of a bonus, do you think maybe this kind of era of slacktivism might come from a sense of powerlessness in our society?
Yes, I agree with you. I think we've been very harsh on slacktivists as such, and we've written them off very quickly rather than look at why they don't actually follow through and do more. I fully agree with you. I think we do feel powerless, and that's why it's so important to bring back that sense of community and to provide people with an opportunity to actually do something more than just like that image or to share an image or create a meme. So it's about creating those opportunities. And what social movements have very well recognised, and some of those that have had some major successes, is that activists come in all shapes and sizes. Not everyone can rock up to a demonstration or chain themselves to a tree or whatever they might want to do. I've spoken to people who created memes and contributed in that kind of way to keep the momentum going, or people who've written letters to the editor. So social movements are increasingly recognising that you need to provide people with different avenues to contribute rather than just expect everyone to be available and do the same thing.
Of course. Well, thank you so, so much for joining us, Katerina. It's been great having you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.